Call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And of course, William Henry's website is williamhenry.net, and this is your hour with William. We'll open up the phone lines. You can talk with him about just any of his mythological finds and probes and investigations. I'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with William Henry. William, do you continue to search for the Holy Grail?
Oh, constantly, yeah. It's, of course, another of those primary symbols for the enlightened state within each and every one of us. We all have the capability of finding the Grail in our hearts, in our minds, and the connection between our heart and our mind, and living the Grail legacy.
Do you think it was real?
I definitely think it was real in terms of a teaching. I no longer subscribe to the idea that it was a simple carpenter's cup. It's far more esoteric and profound than that. The cup is a symbol.
A symbol indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Close to the Indiana Jones movies?
Actually, no. They had a tremendous opportunity there to finish that movie once Indiana finds the Grail in the transformative moment. They had an opportunity to really do something, I think, quite profound. And the way that they would have accomplished that is by showing how Indiana Jones's life changed or transformed as a consequence of discovering the Grail. I mean, it was important that he was able to save his father's life, played by Sean Connery, but it didn't show the follow-through, the after-effect of discovering the Grail, and that's the really important target that people need to get a hold of. Instead, the movie left us with the idea that it was a cup of miracles.
Well, that's true. And the other thing I found fascinating about that movie, William, was, and some of the things you've talked about before, is the knight that was there. That represented, obviously, the Knights Templar, right?
Correct. Yes.
That's what I thought.
Outstanding movie, though. I loved it.
Well, it was fun. It sure was.
Yeah.
Sure was. Let's go to the phones. They will be wide-ranging for you, Mr. Henry.
Excellent.
Let's go to west of the Rockies, first of all. Where are you calling from? You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Gentlemen, you're doing a fantastic job. Knowledge is light, and you guys beam. You're doing great as light workers. And I just like to ask your guest a quick question about this crystal skulls, if you've come across anything about what's been said about them housing information, and also the Planet X scenario. I believe if you go to SoHo and if you read books like Urantia and Voyagers 2, Secrets of Amenti, you'll find there's a lot going on that's being kept from us. And I've done research with David Icke, but asked to do some work with him, and mm-hmm. I just want to say that with Zachariah Sitchin and Richard Hoagland's collective a group of information, I think the Sumerians have got it nailed down pretty good. And I'd just like to get his comments, and I would just want to thank you for doing such a fantastic job tonight. You're really helping a lot of folks.
All right, Williams, crystal skulls, thank you.
Yeah, I come across those from time to time, George, and I'm very fascinated by them. I haven't ever been in contact with one that I would consider one of the original or quote-unquote authentic crystal skulls. But I'm inclined to go along with some of what is ascribed to these in terms of channelers of this profound spiritual energy, as well as a device for housing the spiritual energy. The one contact I had that was kind of funny to me is there was a shaman who came up here to Nashville from the Yucatan. He had done all kinds of mythological research down there, and he came to the conclusion that Nashville was going to be the new city of light. So he came up here, brought his crystal skull with him, and was doing some poking around town, and we happened to hook up, and I was explaining to him that one of the great mysteries of Nashville is the Great Seal of Nashville, which portrays an Indian holding a skull in his hand, although no one can say exactly what the meaning of that symbolism is. And so as I'm explaining this to him, he's standing there holding this crystal skull in his hand, and we burst out laughing, saying, wait a minute, maybe the Indian on the Great Seal of Nashville is actually a Mayan, and the skull he's holding is a crystal skull. And it's finally returned to Nashville.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that indeed. And I have not heard Planet X brought up in about a year, and he brings it up. Have you heard anything about another new scenario?
No, I have not, although I continue, of course, to research the whole Nibiru scenario, and was greatly assisted again by our friend Mike Heiser, who has gone into the Chicago Assyrian Dictionary and rooted out the definitions of Nibiru as a, quote-unquote, a star, a gate, and a crossing point. And so I continue to add those terms together and go off on my line of speculation here that Nibiru or Planet X is in fact a stargate, a crossing point that we are soon to be bridging.
Interesting. Have you ever read the book of Urantia?
I started
it's
on
huge.
That.
And it takes about 6 years to finish, I think. It's that
right. I started on that in about 1982. 1983.
Well, in your case,
I got a copy of it.
Took 20 years for you, huh?
Right.
It is. It's interesting theories in that book.
Oh, astounding. I mean, the human imagination is, we just cannot ever underestimate it. And I think the Urantia book is an example of the human imagination influenced by perhaps a higher mind. And as so many texts like that are, it's very cryptic, but yet it's very explicit in its teaching, and it does seem to dovetail with what so many other earlier traditions are saying.
Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, hi.
Yeah.
I'm on? Okay, great. First of all, I just want to thank you for the show.
For listening.
And I have a really interesting connection I thought of how we humans are connected to the Earth. The Earth is about 4.5 billion years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some basic math where the heartbeat beats about 70 times a second, times 60 minutes in an hour, times 24 hours in a day, times 365.25, times 120 years, which is the maximum age the Bible gives. And that comes out to almost 4.5 billion. So I was wondering if that was ever brought up at any point, and can comment on that.
That's now there's his own investigation there, William.
Yeah, very good. That seems to me that rings a bell with one of the mystic numbers that the mythologist Joseph Campbell was working with that is very similar to that. I'll have to look that up as we're talking and see if I can come back with that.
Okay. All right, and we'll do that. So just listen on your radio, and we'll get you an answer eventually. His mathematics could be wrong, though. He said 365.25. Should it not be 364.25?
Ah, right. You're very nice, George.
Yes, I caught that, which means then it's 4,762,304 heartbeats
okay.
instead of 4.5.
Yeah, so that's definitely not the number that Campbell was working with.
Next up, let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George and William. I'll be as brief and concise as possible, and I'll listen for my answer off the air.
Okay.
These images, William, of the black hole ejecta that were seen on pottery, and those images were never available prior to the advent of modern radio astronomy. And is it your experience that these images are archetypical and, you know, in the Jungian sense, do people, have people been writing them down and describing them throughout history?
Well, I've been able to document them throughout this one particular period of history, approximately 1600 BC up to about 1200 AD. And that's what I presented on tonight's show, and am continually seeking out additional examples of this imagery. And you hit the nail on the head. It is definitely archetypal imagery that can be applied both to the human body in terms of the splitting of the egg of the in the womb, as well as the galactic level as well. And so that's what I think we are dealing with here is some very profound archetypal imagery.
And I'm still baffled at how they got the information, even though, you know, we've heard of the Dogon tribe, the tribe in Africa, is it
yes.
not? And they knew all about the double star system of Sirius, for example. How could they know this stuff?
Well, not just the double star system. There's a profound writer out there right now named Laird Scranton who wrote a book called Hidden Meanings, Founding Symbols of Civilization. It's about the Dagon symbolism. And what he shows is that within the Dagon symbolism is actually the exact same symbol that we moderns use for a wormhole. Not only that, but he equates this with images that Brian Greene, the physicist, uses in his book, The Fabric of the Cosmos and also The Elegant Universe, to portray creation at the microcosmic level. And so what we're seeing here again is yet another example of the cutting edge of modern science being reflected in this simple symbolism of the ancients. And the question is, once again, where did they get this knowledge? Is it coming from within our DNA? Is our DNA loaded up with all of this knowledge? And is this knowledge triggered by cosmic rays coming from the center of the galaxy? That's what I had proposed in my book, The Healing Sun Code, following on the work of anthropologists who have been studying this symbolism as well. And is it possible that each of us has this knowledge latent within our DNA and we can trigger it, and ultimately that's what brings about the enlightenment of our species?
Let's go to our wild card line. It's your turn. You're on with William Henry. Hi there.
Hi there, yeah. Mr. It's a nice chance to get a chance to talk with you. I just have a question getting back to the whole it's and
sure
Krios.
And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Saratoga, New York.
Okay, sure thing.
But I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get you guys off track. I have, just listening to you, I have so many questions, but just getting back to the it's and the Krios that would come from, I believe you said, a vortex of some sort.
Yes.
Anyway, when this substance reaches Earth and it's collected, like you said, and you said it could become an enlightening substance. Is it enlightening to all people, or is it just enlightening to certain types of people?
That's a very good question. I would suggest it would be certain types of people because, again, following on the work of Lawrence Gardner in his book Lost Secrets of the Sacred Ark, in which he describes the refinery of the Egyptian pharaohs that actually refined this substance in ancient Egypt, that refinery was in continuous operation for several thousand years, and it appears that it was tightly regulated and controlled only for the benefit of those who had gone through the Egyptian mystery schools, in particular the pharaohs. So it may be that there is a form of training or quote-unquote initiation that has undergone preparatory to having this experience.
Right, so not anyone could just control this ability. You would have to be, like you said, you know, trained.
Yes.
Oh, incredible. Great. Thank you so much.
All right.
I appreciate the chance to come in.
Did you go to school for all this, William? How did you learn this?
No, I'm almost completely self-taught, and I've just had the benefit of accumulating a pretty vast library and was gifted by God with an open mind.
What's your next conference? You do a lot of them.
Well, I've got several that are coming up. I'll be at the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles on Valentine's weekend. And then I've got the Stargate Mystery School with Lawrence Gardner in Los Angeles the following weekend. And you can get information on this at my WilliamHenry.net site. I go to North Dallas, Texas after that. And then on March 8th, I'm thrilled. I'm going to be at the International UFO Congress again. It's been several years since
I've been to that
Congress. It's probably been a good 5 years. Well, if I take that back. I was there immediately after September 11th. And so I'm...
It's going on 4 years.
Right. Very pleased that Bob and Terry Brown, who put on the conference, have invited me back. And they've got a tremendous lineup of people coming to that conference. And you can go to the UFO Congress, internationalufocongress.com site.
Can you imagine if it's going on 4 years since 9/11?
Oh, I know. It's so hard to believe. So hard to believe.
Where does time go, William? What happens to it?
Time flies.
It really does. Let's go to our first-time caller line. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yeah, hi. Go ahead.
My name is Miriam. I'm from Clinton, Illinois.
Sure. I know where that is.
Well, I've been hearing you talk here for about the last 2 or 3 weeks about where is the covenant of the Ark.
Yep.
I don't see why people don't know it. They have found it several years ago. I read about it in a copy of... Biblical Archaeology Today.
Where'd they find it?
It's underneath the wall. It's about 50. I get my numbers mixed up. So you see, either 50 or 150 yards diagonally from the Dome of the Rock. It's underneath the wall.
I had heard the possibilities of that. William, have you?
The man has seen it.
I think she's referring to Ron Wyatt.
Yes.
No, it's a Jewish name. He was a rabbi and archaeologist.
Maybe he was with Wyatt.
Possibly, yeah, because I think he's, as far as I knew, is the last to make the claim to have actually seen it or located that.
There was a crack in the wall, and he looked through it, and the two cherubs on it are bent from when it fell, and they tried to straighten it up, so it's there. David was not a stupid man. He had a copy made.
Why didn't they go get it?
Because the time is not yet.
Ah. All right, William, let's get your reaction, and thanks for your call.
Oh, I got another thing to tell
right.
him,
put
too,
our
if he wants to check it out.
Sure.
Now, I don't believe in past live regressions, but I must be doing a lot of remote viewing, and I'm almost never wrong. Atlantis is over by the Bermuda Triangle. It's very near the Marianas Trench.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly where Edgar Cayce believes it might be, too.
Yeah, they have found the walls of the city underneath, but it's too deep to get to. And in Greek mythology, they speak of flying carpets. I believe they had, like, the hovercrafts that they have now. And the reason they were destroyed is they were doing genetic manipulations. That's why you had the half-goat, half-women and that thing.
All right, well, let's find out, William, how do we get your take on the possibility that the Ark was spotted? And I would figure if he could see it behind a wall or a crevice, he'd go back, whoever it was, they'd go and get it.
Well, you would presume so, but it is such a political hot potato that maybe they would just kind of leave it where it's at until the quote-unquote end times, because it's certainly a trigger for the final cataclysm and ultimately the reappearance of the Christ or Messiah. So, I mean, we're not just talking about any ancient artifact. This is the one that ultimately becomes the trigger for massive changes on the planet.
Your theory about the Ark is that it also had a huge pillar on top, right?
That's exactly right, yeah. In fact, one of Dana Augustine's interpretations of that completed Ark of the Covenant based upon Egyptian originals on the front page of my site. And I'm absolutely convinced that that is the complete Ark of the Covenant. And, well, for one, Lawrence Gardner has taken a look at this and said, hey, it makes sense, because they do describe a rod of enlightenment called the Rod of Aaron that accompanied the Ark. Why couldn't it have been a pillar that was attached to the gold plates of the chest itself?
We'll be back with more phone calls for William Henry. One of the most fascinating possibilities about the Ark of the Covenant advanced by Ethiopian Christians. They claim they have the Ark, that it is being held in a church called the St. Mary of Zion, guarded by a monk known as the Keeper of the Ark.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505. Talk with George Norrie. Call the Wildcard line at area code 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is area code 818-501-4721. To talk with George toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 1-800-825-5033. West of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. International callers may reach George Norrie by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, they're talking about the possibility that young people should not be using cell phones because of the strong possibility of brain tumors. Our guest tomorrow night on Coast to Coast, William Thomas, well known, of course, for Con and Chemtrails. He has done some investigating of cell phones and health risks, so we'll be talking with him about that on our next Coast to Coast program. When we come back, though, we will be talking with William Henry and the rest of your phone calls. And welcome back, William Henry, our guest, and the rest of your phone calls. And William, not a lot of time left, so let's go right back to the calls. You ready?
Great.
We'll pick it up by going to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. You are on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, I'm on the air?
Yes, sir, you sure are.
My name is Ray. Bear with me here. I'm a little nervous.
Don't worry, Ray. Just sit back like it's an old phone conversation with a friend.
I had a question for both of you. Have either of you ever heard of the Necronomicon?
Nope.
It's the ancient Book of the Dead, ancient Sumerian religion.
Now I've heard of the Tibetan and the Egyptian Book of the Dead. So is that similar?
Well, I'm not really sure. I just picked this book up recently, and I've been reading it, and something that's very interesting to me. You talked about you'd have to know how these people acquired this information.
They'd
either have to have some sort of high-powered telescope, which is, you know, ridiculous, or they'd have to, someone would have to tell them. And, what I thought was interesting is their creator, supposedly, you know, his name was Marduk, and supposedly you can summon his powers.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the 50 powers you can summon, it says, I can't really pronounce the name, but it says it giveth excellent knowledge concerning the movements of the stars and the meanings thereof.
All right, well, let's go to you, William Henry, and I'll let you listen on the radio. You have some familiarity with what he's saying?
Yeah, the Necronomicon is a book that was written by H.P. Lovecraft, who is called America's Secret Alchemist. And essentially, the word Necronomicon translates as an image of death or law of death. And it is loosely based upon Sumerian mythology. But in my view, and this is my opinion, it's a work of fiction that attempts to pass itself off as an authentic ancient manuscript. But in reality, it's something that came out of the mind of H.P. Lovecraft, who is one of the premier occult writers, fiction writers of the early 20th century.
Well, wasn't there a classic movie series called The Evil Dead, which they also were based from? I think so.
Now, I'm not familiar with that.
Might have been.
Mm-hmm.
Might have been indeed our help from Bad Boy from the Imaginative Worlds helping us out with our instant research projects. We've got millions of researchers at our beck and call.
Absolutely. That makes the show phenomenal.
Thanks, Bad Boy. Appreciate that. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Tuskegee, Alabama.
Exactly. Hi there.
Hello, Wim. This is Norman. I've talked to you probably about a year ago. From Tuskegee, Alabama.
Sure, Norman, I remember you.
Okay, I love your work, still doing well. I was wondering, about last year I read something on the internet from a channeler who claimed that a group of extraterrestrials had sent out a message asking should they actually come and show themselves to humanity. You know, to break everything down, I was with all the stuff that's going on in the world, you know, the environment, of course, to Sumi over there in Southeast Asia, and just, you know, just the breakdown of trust in politics. Do you believe that the Anunnaki will ever make their presence known to humanity to probably bring some form of hope to us? Because it seems like they are the only ones that are left that are going to be able to bring some type of hope to humanity, you know, now that, you know, there's just really nothing down here we can really trust. And I'll hang up and let you answer the question.
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, we have to go back and remember that the word Anunnaki is a very broad term for all the beings who came to Earth from heaven, or the heavenly realms. And I'm not one personally that subscribes to this idea that we're going to suddenly see a flotilla of ships. I think that the Anunnaki have revealed themselves throughout human history and will continue to do so in very subtle ways. And I look for examples of their appearance in Well, for example, the technology realm is a very good place to look because Ea or Enki, the primary, the person who's attributed by Zachariah Sitchin anyway, with being the primary scientific mind behind the Anunnaki and their various activities here on Earth, was considered to be the lord of technology as well as alchemy. And it's absolutely remarkable the way that we see this whole technological explosion unfolding in our world today. And many people, going back to this Philip Corso, claim that this technological revolution was engendered after the Roswell crash with the reverse engineering of alien technology. So I would suggest that may be one fulfillment of this return, unquote, of the Anunnaki.
What, of everything you've investigated, mythologically speaking, what do you find to be the most fascinating thing?
Well, I'm absolutely perplexed and just locked on to any of the gateway stories.
You love that, don't you?
Yeah. That, to me, is where it's at. I mean, the Bible, the book of Genesis, talks about the Gate of Eden that once existed, but it was closed. Then humanity got together to build the Tower of Babel, which means gate, as in stairway to heaven, but it was destroyed. And so there's been this continual effort for many thousands of years on the part of humanity to acquire the secrets of this gate that has been denied to us. And it seems to me that is the focal point of all myth and scripture, is the secrets of those gates.
Let's go to our east of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
Yes, how you do, Mr. Henry? You were talking about the manna, and I've been studying this the manna. I'm blind, but I've been studying on tapes. And the manna comes from the third level of heaven. There are seven levels of heaven. And there's an angel that controls each level of heaven. And in the Revelation, it says in chapter 3, it talks about the manna coming down again. And the scriptures say that it comes from the third level of heaven. And I thought that'd be kind of interesting to, I don't know if he has read anything about that.
No, not specifically that, but thanks for bringing that to my attention. I'll definitely follow up on that.
And that's a Jewish teaching that I've been studying.
Very nice.
All right, thank you. Hey, right before the break, William, I was talking about some work that the Ethiopians claim they have the Ark of the Covenant. Have you heard that theory?
Oh, of course. Yeah, that goes back to Graham Hancock's book, The Sign and the Seal, that he published around 1990, that really started promoting this idea that there is a copy of the Ark of the Covenant, and one is definitely in Ethiopia. So a significant possibility, but again, I look at the Ark as a model of an external model or technology of a process that goes on inside our own bodies, and that to me, once again, is the real temple to be focusing on.
Do you believe that it possibly could have been a battery?
Oh yes, yeah, I definitely think that it was a capacitor of some kind, and it had communications capabilities and all of the whole panoply of attributes that have been ascribed to it.
Okay, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Where are you calling from?
Calling from Miami, Florida.
I was just there last week.
Oh, really?
The weather was great.
Oh, yeah, it always is.
Yeah.
My name is Brian. Actually, I just wanted to congratulate you on having the most intelligent radio show on radio.
Well, I want to congratulate you on being the most intelligent listeners on the radio.
Well, thank you. Actually, what made me call tonight was the bringing up of the French derivative of Christianity in Christo. Wondering which apostle was it derived from, and if it might validate my own belief that it was actually Thomas's denial coupled with his skepticism that led him on to have a closer belief into actually what God was trying to believe. My second question actually just dealt with Atlantis and whether it was the learned knowledge that actually was lost because it might have been the human nature of curiosity that lent too many people to get abandoned in their own demise rather than the science actually taking over.
Well, now here's a mythological theory, William.
Okay, yeah. And this first question, as I understood it, Christos is a Greek word rather than French, and that was the interpretation that I was using, was the Greek Christos, meaning anointed, and referring to an oil of some kind, some form of a syrup, sap, or substance, as the Mayans described it, as a cosmic sap, a rain from heaven. And then on the second question, did curiosity kill the cat in Atlantis? That's a possibility, I mean, but then that would fall into the category of the devil made me do it, too. And I'm not sure that I really go along with that whole idea, because where ultimately it seems like that goes is saying that, you know, humanity gets too big for its britches, and the next thing you know, we're slapped down by some force within the universe. And I believe that if that is to reoccur, now is the time when that's going to happen, but I also believe that we're going to transcend that and actually leave cosmic kindergarten, our present state, and enter cosmic first grade.
But it's such a big part of human nature.
Well, it is, and that's why it's probably the ultimate test. And so here we are once again confronted with this test once again, and again, it's my belief that we'll pass it with flying colors this time.
But it was not derived from an apostle? Christos?
Not Christos? No.
Okay. Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Have you ever investigated angels, William? I've never talked with you about that topic.
Well, like the Hallmark card kind of angels? That's a whole fake concept.
No, the fallen angels.
The fallen angels? Well, sure, yeah. The Nephilim, even the Anunnaki get thrown in there, and... You know, I mean, that this is something that I haven't spent a tremendous amount of time on in terms of exactly what sort of beings these ancient angels were, even if they were in human form, or were they simply personified this way, and if so, why are they portrayed with wings, for example? I mean, these are all really kind of perplexing questions, and I do collect imagery of these ancient beings, and I'm quite fascinated by them.
What if they were aliens who just happened to have wings, like Mothman?
Right, and that's sort of the contemporary interpretation of these beings, that when you see the word angel in the Bible or other myth and scripture, you can insert extraterrestrial being, and there you've got it.
Next up, east of the Rockies, you're up with William Henry. Where are you calling from?
I am on north on 77 through North Carolina.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks.
great show today. Thanks for taking my call. William, one thing I haven't heard y'all talk about today is the crystal skulls, the ancient crystal skulls that supposedly hold the information from the ancients.
Right.
Mayans believe that, you know, someday that these are going to unlock all the ancient information when humanity's ready for it.
Right. And, he missed that from last hour, William, but I'll let you rephrase.
Well, we were talking about the possibility of these skulls as being capable of downloading the knowledge contained within them, that through a process of resonance, an individual can put themselves in attunement with the knowledge within the skull and bring it into their own being.
Yeah, I thought I heard y'all talking about that. Unfortunately, I don't have XM, so I was kind of getting that fuzzy in between places.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a didgeridoo player. I don't know if you've ever had any experience with that. It's an ancient Australian horn, probably the
right.
first instrument ever made.
Right.
And it's all about primal resonance, and it's like a meditative state of actually becoming the music. Really, really an awesome instrument. I was wondering if anybody has ever, and I don't know if a didgeridoo would be a key, but has anybody ever really actively tried to unlock these skulls? Or do they just sit in a vault somewhere?
No, I know that the people that do possess them are actively trying to retrieve the knowledge. And as in the case that I cited, the example of the Mayan shaman coming up here to Nashville from the Yucatan, he definitely felt or believed that he was bringing the skull to Nashville in order to download the information that was in the particular skull that he possessed.
Okay.
Which he did through a ceremony.
That was my question. Like I said, with the didgeridoo, it's an awesome instrument. I'd suggest anybody picking one up. It's the easiest thing to play in the world, and everybody can do it.
Great, thank you.
It's got that weird sound to it. I agree with you, though, that a lot of the secrets have been guarded by groups like the Illuminati. I think they've got a lot of things tucked away.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to start seeing a rollout of some of these things over the coming decades, because the imagination is unlimited now. Whatever we can conceive, we can literally create. I mean, we have, as I mentioned earlier, these four new amazing power tools, genes, bits, neurons, and atoms, with which to remake our world. And if I'm on a crusade these days, it's to work with technologists who are involved in genetic research or nanotechnology or neuroscience, brain science, or these types of disciplines, is to begin to infuse spirit or soul into their technology. Otherwise, it's not going to really go anywhere.
Let's go to our international line. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Yes, sir.
How are you tonight?
I'm fine. And where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Calgary, Alberta, Canada,
sure,
George.
Sure thing. Go ahead, sir.
Fantastic show you have again tonight. I wanted to get back to you, what your guest was talking about earlier, about how the Internet has changed the world.
Sure.
And, you know what? Jesus gave several prophecies about the sign of his coming, and that was one of the signs, that there would be increase in knowledge, or knowledge would be greatly increased. And I was just wondering if you would like to make a comment, or your guests would like to make a comment on that. And do you and just a quick question here, do you believe, or your guests, do you believe that we're living in the end times now?
Good question.
Along with everything that's going on in the world today, and if we look at these prophecies, I think that we can pretty well relate them to our world today.
Go ahead, William.
Well, on the idea of the Internet and knowledge increasing, it's kind of humorous. I have seen Yahoo as an equivalent word for Yahweh, the God of the Old Testament. So I find that kind of a funny twist of fate, that Yahoo becomes so prominent.
Good point. Never thought of that.
And also...
end times. We close?
Well, I think so. I mean, based on the precession of the equinoxes, this 26,000-year cosmic cycle that our sun and solar system make around the galactic center, we are coming to the close of one age and preparing to enter into a new age.
So I don't think end times, though, means the end of time.
No, it does not. It's an ending and a new beginning as well. And this is where I'm encouraged that we have actually passed the test that we were describing earlier and are now free to enter into this new world and become more fully empowered beings.
Take the last minute, William. Tell us about the DVD, the books, the phone number.
Oh, great. Thank you. Yeah, I have a special DVD set. It's called Stargate 2012, and it discusses many of these concepts that we've been talking about tonight in terms of Milky Way metaphysics and also what the Mayan prophecies describe for 2012. And the second half of it is a workshop that provides insights into how you can apply this in your daily life in preparation for what is to come. This is available at my website, which is williamhenry.net. If you're not on the Internet, you can call at area code 615-292-7863. And if you like, you can leave a message and I'll call you back.
Very good. How about that? You can call him and he'll call you back. William, thanks a lot. You're enlightening,
my
friend.
George.
Take care of yourself.
You too.
William Henry, investigative mythologist. For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.